This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Nicola Bates. How are you, Nicola?
I'm well. How are you?
I am a bunch of fluffy ducks, a box of fluffy ducks. Love that saying. I love that saying. Can you imagine a nice box full of fluffy ducks, isn't it? Oh, isn't that cute? But we're not going to talk about cute today. We're going to be talking about the strategic direction of WineGP. Because when they took you on, they really changed direction, I think, anyway. You can correct me if not. Because before they were an advocacy, but when you joined WineGP, it really changed to being much more about interacting with government. That's my view anyway. Is that your view or?
So when I joined WineGP, the first thing I wanted to do was to really understand what do WineGP members need and want from us as an organisation. I don't think that had been asked in a really thorough way prior to my time, or certainly not for a long time. So in my first year, the strategy was all about listen plus delivery equals value. And so we did a big listening exercise. I went on a regional tour where I went to see all our regional associations and spoke to the members directly. We also held a policy focus group during that time because we knew there was going to be a general election during the year and we wanted to really understand what matters to our members and how can we advocate on their behalf. In that same year, we also conducted a series of surveys of our members of what they wanted for those people who couldn't attend those meetings. We use something called our working groups. We have lots of specialist groups where we have wonderful volunteer members who are giving up their expertise and time to make the sector better. Things like viticulture, winemaking, sustainability, education and skills. And we ask them to carry out a SWOT analysis of the issues in their space. And we also ask the same of the regional directors as well, for them to really consider it from a regional perspective. All of that information came together along with research, and we had a big strategy day where we had all the regional chairs, all the working group chairs, my board, and importantly my team, our team, coming together to really understand what matters. And fundamentally, over the years, we've now pared it down to saying what matters most. What are the problems we're seeking to solve for the sector? Which is where we talk about we help our members to make wine, market wine, and tell the story. On the make side, the two issues really are around production and people, making sure that we're getting the best yield from production and that it's protected. On the people side, making sure we're getting the right flow of people through, because we need quite a lot of people to help this sector grow, and we want to get the best quality coming in and then us retaining them. On the marketing side, there's two sides of it. One, sales. Sales need to match production. If we can get that to happen, then the industry is in a happy place. Secondly, the proof point is quality. We're not going to get anywhere unless people still have an understanding that English wine, Welsh wine is a quality product. And so constantly pointing that out is key. And then finally on the tail side, the reputation. And that's my personal background. So, you know, how do we A, protect the reputation of the industry, and B, how do we make sure that we're advocating on behalf of it? So really, over that first year, it was understanding these are the needs, these are the problems which we are here to face and deal with. Across all three different elements, we've upped our game. But I think that simply because they've never had a government affairs professional in post before, it seemed more visible on my side. Must say, huge hats off and kudos to my predecessors, because the connections, the engagement with government, which I was able to sit into, was fantastic. And what we've now done is built sort of a information pack around it so that we're able to utilise those connections in order to get what's needed for our membership, and that's been articulated in the best possible way.
And duty and regulation, what's one realistic thing you think that the UK industry could actually achieve in the next couple of years?
So there are something called the Better Wine Reforms, and they've been going on for a while. It's sort of a post-Brexit activity, principally of the previous government. There were two rounds, which we had things like removal of wrappers from corks and allowing to use caps, and there was a piece in and around ice wine for Scotland. The third round has been outstanding for a long time, and that's the one which actually really matters for our sector. There are two components to it. One is making sure that only British grapes can be defined as British wine. You have a situation at the moment that you can have made wine in the UK and that's then being marketed as British, which undermines our IP, the work which we're doing to put value into our sector. We think we're going to get that. We're pretty convinced by it. The other component which we are working hard on is in and around transformation of product into the UK. So you can bulk send wine at the moment, and that will be bottled from a still perspective. And actually from a canning perspective, you can carbonate it and then put it in. They are looking at whether that can be done from a bottle perspective. In the first review of the consultation, and please bear with me, politics is all very complicated and very slow, but the first iteration of this, we managed to ensure that traditional method sparkling transformation was taken out. And that was absolutely critical because 90% of our sparkling wine is traditional method. And we're now looking at what does it mean for the other 10% and what can we do there. So we're fighting hard in order to try and stop that potential bulk transformation of wines in the UK from happening, so we can protect shelf space for our producers, not just of Charmat and carbonated, but of traditional methods, so we're not losing more shelf space when we're trying to gain it.
No, I don't actually follow that, sorry. What do you mean by transformation? Can you just explain that in more English?
Yeah, of course. So the idea is if you send over wine
from
wine from anywhere in the world.
Okay, yeah.
You can stick it in a Charmat tank and you can, or you can carbonate it and then sell it through.
Yeah.
First and foremost, let's protect it and make sure they can't call it British made wine.
Yeah.
That would have to be done as
that British made wine term is longer than English wine and all the PDOs and PGIs. That British label has been around for 50 years.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it predates the English wine industry.
And that's really key for us to stop. But also, given the number of barriers that our industry faces, and given the fact that we don't have a level playing field, we're saying, look, give our core sector, you know, brilliant stills. I'm not taking away from the stills at all, but our core sector, are what we are known for, is on the sparkling. Make sure that we can actually still be able to get shelf space at this particular point when we're on trend and people are interested, rather than introducing some new product which people then get excited about, especially with the sort of marketing spend that others can bring to bear. So that's something which we would like to see taken out. There's also other pieces around
Lowenhoe
as well.
How much British wine is there? There's not that much British wine, is there?
There's not that much British wine.
So it can't be that bigger priority if there's not that much shelf space dedicated to it.
No, but what I'm talking about is a new market which would come along, which is seeking to tackle Prosecco as an opportunity. Whether it's called British or not, we would prefer to say, okay, well, we want to have first dibs at being able to get that shelf space, rather than making it even easier for other producers to send their wines into the UK at a cheaper rate than we can deliver on, and therefore having another reason not to have English on shelf or okay. Welsh on shelf.
All right. And do you consider that quite a serious problem?
My job is to future-proof. So whether it's an issue for now or whether it's an issue for 10 years, 20 years' time, that's why trade associations exist, because we look at risks and we anticipate and we are trying to constantly make sure that our sector has the advantage.
If you're looking ahead, and the industry's been growing. What's the first thing that breaks if the size of the industry triples?
I don't necessarily know the industry is going to triple. We want to see that there is sustainable growth all the way through. Where we've modelled it is into 2032, where we anticipate you would have sort of hectarage which would deliver about 20 million bottles. We're sort of on the mid-track of that sort of particular growth piece. We haven't modelled beyond there. Going out 20 years and saying what breaks, you're not sort of factoring in all the interventions that you would seek to make and modifications which you're going along all the time. So my hope is that as we continue to grow, whether it's a production issue, whether it's a sales issue, whether it's a reputation challenge, we're able to help smooth out those waves so that there isn't anything which breaks in 20 years' time, because actually WineGB is holding the hand of the industry as it's continuing to grow.
Sounds like you just sidestep that question. For a small to mid-sized winery who are paying membership fees to you, what's the single most tangible benefit that you see them receiving today?
Yeah. I mean, everyone joins for different reasons. It's very rare that someone joins for just one thing. If they are a small vineyard or winery, often what they're doing is they're using our information services, our knowledge services, our webinars, our seminars, our networking to really get to know the industry incredibly well. So this is where we have it, everything under the make. We redeveloped our branding and our website last year and went through it really critically, thinking, how do people engage? How do they navigate their way through? We had a huge amount of information. We've got even more now. Huge amount of information, but people didn't know how to find it and weren't using it. And it's critical for them to be able to develop their business. So we worked with the NFU Mutual, and we've developed a knowledge hub. So you can land on our viticulture page or our winery page or our marketing page, and you find all the information which is going to be relevant. So you go on searching for, let's say, I don't know, how to build your wine tourism offer. You'll land in the marketing section, and actually you'll then be introduced to an awful lot of information perhaps you didn't know about. Visit Britain's Pink Book, for instance, and its accessibility report, stuff which you probably would value knowing but wouldn't necessarily fall over unless you were deliberately looking. We help our members to identify the information they need to know now to fit into their business. So from a small and medium-sized business, they're probably using us for that knowledge exchange piece, as well as ensuring that their voice is heard in government. I hear from people who are the smallest vineyards all the way up through to the largest, who are really, really geeing us on to make sure that our industry is getting the three things it really, really needs in amongst everything else we've articulated in our manifesto for growth.
If you're looking back in 5 years' time, what does success look like to you?
Okay, so I want to ensure that as a CEO, I want to make sure that as an industry body, we are resilient. We have the right number of people in post who are delivering for our members. So we want to grow our membership. We want to grow our income from sponsors so we can do more, so we can have a greater presence. On the make side, I want someone who can land on our website, land and engage with us, and have the information they need, however granular we can find that for them and help them to get their answer. On the tell side, I really want to see in 5 years' time that we've secured a wine tourism relief. I want to see that we have more products in the FETF, the Future Equipment and, I can never remember this, basically the kit fund from DEFRA. I would like to see us have winery support where you can actually get subsidy for having a new tank or a press. I'd like to see more money going into research, and I'd like to see more money going into education. We were very helpful with Plumpton in securing a £1.5 million grant from the previous government, which would go into education, and that was announced at our annual conference by the Secretary of State at the time. So
I was there on that. That's when I first met you.
Yeah, there you go. It was a good event. So those are the things which we are seeking to do for people. And then when it comes to marketing, there are a number of big things which we're known for. We're known for our awards. We're known for our national trade tasting, media tasting. We're known for English Wine Week. We're expanding what we can do there. So we introduced our Golden 50 in the last 2 years in order to be able to showcase that and make it easier for everyone to get some value. We want to make sure that English Wine Week is not just present in and across the vineyards. It's present in across all the independents, the big retailers are taking up, and also it has an international awareness. You know, my aspiration, 31 days of Riesling, well, we can get to something similar with English Wine Week over a number of years. Big aspiration, well, let's go for it. Further things in terms of marketing, making sure we have more of a regional play. So this year we are introducing a pilot and having regional tastings in Manchester and Edinburgh. If that works, we'll extend that much further. We want to be in other activation points. So we are at London Wine Fair again this year, really excited by that partnership. They're having a host nation, and the host nation is us. Hurrah. So making the most out of that opportunity. But there are lots and lots of other opportunities to meet the trade. And the question is, what's our role as WineGB to tell that category-wide story in as much as supporting those brands to tell their brands? And what do we do with consumers? Do we do more in terms of that consumer engagement? And that's the bit which over the next few years we're going to crunch through and work out and see more delivery against. In the next 5 years, there's a lot to do, but it looks pretty exciting.
What's the single most important measure for you though?
I want to ensure that every member small to large, is looking at YGB and seeing value. And then when it comes to renewals period each year, there's no debate about being part of YGB, because we are definitely holding their hand through their journey and securing results. And that could be any different aspect of what we offer, all of it, or just one thing. But delivering that and making sure they have satisfaction is what matters most.
You mentioned a few times about getting government subsidies for tanks or whatever. And before Brexit, obviously, the EU used to help out a lot. I know a number of people who had their wineries kitted out thanks to the EU. We left them, and I'm pretty much a free market guy. I don't like the idea of subsidies. I think they're just wrong. They distort markets. So what are the key subsidies in the tax breaks? Let's just dive into this a little bit. You mentioned some subsidies for tourism in terms of allowing duty-free wine for the first 50,000 bottles. And you also mentioned subsidies from the government for equipment. Are you looking at handouts, or are you looking at relief, tax relief for that?
I am highly ambivalent of how to get money into the sector. We just need to get money into a sector which is growing. And if we don't, then we potentially lose this opportunity. Every other wine sector in the world has really strong government support if they're going to succeed. And we are simply asking for that support back. So we've mentioned the wine tourism relief. We think that's really good because it's targeted and focused and ensure that it goes directly to our market. It's also WTO compliant, by the way, so that's good. We want to help people who are seeking to grow their businesses and also to stabilise their businesses. So if it was on the winery, so they can get a press or tanks, that then ensures that we are investing for the future. We're simply saying to government, if we're investing, then you should be looking at supporting the sector to do the same. I'm also a bit of a free marketeer. And if it wasn't the case that you have massive subsidies for car manufacturing, for steel, for AI, for every single sector in the UK, that's fine. But we do have subsidies, we do have support, we do have tax breaks for all those other very big industries. We are the fastest growing agricultural sector in the UK. We have the potential to be a massive boost for the economy, not just from a wine sales perspective, but from a cultural perspective in terms of talking to a new form of tourism, a new way of living, a new style of being in England and Wales and Scotland. So that all has relevance and cachet, and we're just saying, look, we need this support, and we need this support now, because it's not as profitable as other industries are, but that doesn't mean it can't have huge value going forward.
Just to finish up now, Nicola, we've just got one last question. What's the one UK wine you've had recently that makes you think this is where the industry's going?
Oh, God, you can't ask me that question.
I just did.
You can't ask me. I have 500 favourites. Every different style, shape and form. No, I refuse to answer that question, Chris. I'm very sorry.
Oh, that's a fair call, I suppose. All right, in that case, what's your favourite English wine?
I refer the honourable gentleman to the question I answered before. It's really difficult. I have such an opportunity to taste amazing wines, and I love them all. Yeah, these fantastic pet nats, people like Vagabond and London Crew, who are really playing, really innovating. Westwell, for instance, with lovely sort of natural ferments. And then you have some of the most refined Chardonnays from places like Gusbourne, or you can think through, this is where all my names go out of my head. Everyone laughs at me because I've got a terrible memory for names. But you know, you have it all, or Chapel Down, or you can think through to the Crouch Valley and some of the most beautiful wines which are coming through there. I love our reds. I love the Divocos, which you can get in Wales, the wines which you're having up in Yorkshire through the peewees and the hybrids. I love the storytelling behind it as well. I think that always adds flavour when you're rather than just simply the taste, because it gives you a sense of place and what that means. I love our sparklings, whether it's traditional method and some of the ones which are laid down for an incredibly long time, all the way through to carbonated in can. Col Fondo, which you might get through sort of bar tap, and Charmat as well. it is all just brilliant. And what's amazing is this, our diversity. So we have over 99 grape varieties in the UK. It's impossible to choose a favourite off the back of that.
I'm surprised you mentioned Peewee grape varieties and Divacoa, etc. Is Wine GP actively encouraging that? Because that, to me, I'm a big Peewee supporter. I think some of the more recent hybrids that have been coming out offer a lot of opportunity for a wet, cool environment like the UK.
Look, they are incredibly sustainable. We haven't spoken about our Sustainable Wines Great Britain certification programme. And, you know, we have 43% of vineyards in the country who are SWGB licensed, which means that they are really thinking about what's their environmental impact. Peewees and hybrids play a part in that. The question mark is always, how do you get consumers to understand and buy? But it does mean that we are planting right across the country in a way which we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And when you have disease-resistant vines, then that's all the best in terms of when you're looking at sprays and other protections which you might want to use. So they are definitely of good value. They have their place. It's not really Wine GB's role to shape a market. The market will shape itself. We're there to help our members go down whichever route they seek to go down, and we'll see more and more hybrids and peewees coming into the UK and developing from now on.
I've had some quite good peewee reds from England a wee while ago, and I was thinking, do you know what, I'm not a big fan of English red, to be honest. Sorry.
you just need to try more, Chris. You just need to try more.
I've tried enough. I've got to the point now where I would never buy an English red unless I'd tried it first.
Oh, I just see that as a challenge. any of our listeners with a red should be sending Chris in samples.
All right then, Nicola. I think we'll wrap it up there. Cheers very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.